Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's the most wonderful time.
Are you hoping to get out and celebrate the holidays, yet wondering what you can do with social distancing in place?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to Bentleyville 2020, the pandemic drive-through style event.
Well, you can, from the comfort of your car, with Bentleyville and other lighting displays from Hayward to Lincoln Park, reimagined as drive-throughs. Then take a violin, drums, and two guys named Nick, and you get one less guest and some of the most unique musical sounds in the Twin Ports. All that in regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's the most wonderful time.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Are you hoping to get out and celebrate the holidays in some way this season, yet wondering what you can do with social distancing in place? Well, if you enjoy Christmas and holiday light displays without leaving your car, you can. The region's biggest display is Duluth's Bentleyville, of course, and this year is strictly a drive-through at $10 per car. Linda Nervick of Winter Fun 101 volunteered to visit it for us, and while she waits in the lines that can take an hour or two, though not if you come later at night, we'll check in with other displays from Hayward to Lincoln Park. First, let's see how far Linda's gotten.
Hey, Robin. I'm at Bentleyville, and wow, it's exciting.
It's exciting, but are you going anywhere?
No, but just being here is exciting. It's a big, long, serpentine line. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 rows with about 20 cars in each row.
All right. Well, as you wend your way along that serpentine line, we'll make some calls and find out about some other Christmas and holiday displays. Don't go anywhere.
Okay. Sounds good.
Superior Chamber of Commerce. This is Nikki. How can I help you?
Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
So we have Linda Nervick driving around Bentleyville, and we thought we would take this time to ask you to enlighten us, if you will, and tell us about displays in the Superior Douglas County area.
Sure. So we have some fabulous lighting displays in the Superior Douglas County area. City of Superior has the Christmas holiday tree at Center City Park. You can just drive by on Tower and Belknap there. And then we also are participating in the Christmas Lighting Challenge. So there's about 30 businesses and homes that have wonderful lighting displays up, some fantastic. I would definitely recommend getting out and driving around and checking those out.
And where can we find those?
You can find a listing of all of the Christmas Lighting Challenge participants at ChristmasLightingChallenge.com.
That's ChristmasLightingChallenge.com, normal spelling, I assume. And am I hearing a little modesty here, perhaps?
Well, yes. So Superior has been the champion of the Christmas Lighting Challenge for the last 3 years, and we're facing some pretty stiff competition this year versus Hermantown, Duluth, and Cloquet. But I am optimistic that we will continue to retain our crown.
Any particular ones stand out for you?
So there is one at 2101 East 3rd Street by Culver's. They actually have a walkthrough display. Very fantastic. They're in our master's category this year because they have won previously. And then there's also 2319 Susquehanna Avenue. What a fantastic display they have this year.
Once again, those addresses and listeners, have a pen and pencil ready. We've got tons more for you.
Yep, so that was 2101 East 3rd Street and 2319 Susquehanna Avenue.
And they're both in Superior.
Social distancing is being observed, but it is such a great display, even if you want to just stay in the car.
Okay, we've been talking to Nikki Firmakis from the Superior Douglas County Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you.
And now let's head back to Linda and see how far she's gotten.
I've been sitting still for about an hour and now moving. Looks like I'm about 5 minutes from the entry.
When you say moving, how fast do you mean?
1 mile per hour. Yes, I'm in my little Prius here, and it does say 1 mile per hour. Oh, I'm going two miles per hour. Now I've just made the turn. They're just about to do the countdown for the lights turning on.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to Bentleyville 2020, the pandemic drive-through style event. Thank you for joining us this evening. Each night at approximately this time, we do a countdown to turn all of our lights on. You're welcome to either turn down, roll down your window, or use your horn to help us count down. Are you folks ready?
Ready.
Here we go, folks.
Woohoo! Oh, this is just magical.
All right, well, while Linda enjoys that magic, we'll check in with Hayward and see what's shining there.
This is Sherry. May I help you?
Hi, Sherry. We're looking for lights, and we understand in Hayward you have a lure of lights.
We do, because we're such a big fishing community. Lure is an L-U-R-E, you know, like a fishing lure. So what we do, it's really kind of cool, our quaint little town. You know, we have lots of little shops. Some of them have painted fronts, so the whole front of their store is lights. So, like, the front of their store is all green or all blue. Mm-hmm. You can drive right down Main Street. You don't have to get out of your car for the whole social distancing thing. It's only two more weekends. It's this Saturday and then next Saturday. And this Saturday, they're actually going to do horse-drawn sleigh rides from 12 to 3, which is pretty cool. You mm-hmm. have to stay with your family to ride on the sleigh. You know, you're not going to be mixing with other people.
Got it. And what's the most unusual or memorable display you've seen?
Unusual. You know, I mean, like a couple years ago, we were voted like one of the most hometowns to look like a Hallmark movie.
Well, Hallmark works very hard to make those sets. You should approach them and see if you can get a contract or something like that. They won't even have to use fake snow.
Exactly. It would be a perfect setting for a movie.
All right. We've been talking to Sherry Beckman of the Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau about the Lure of Lights displays in downtown Hayward. Now let's go up to Ashland.
The Ashland Chamber.
Hi, this is Robin Washington looking for Mary McFetridge.
Well, hi, Robin. How are you?
I'm great, and I'll be even better if you could tell us who's lighting up the homes and the businesses of Ashland.
Well, this is the first time we've done a City of Ashland holiday decorating contest. So we're really excited. We typically put on a big Christmas parade, and we have pictures with Santa, and we do the big Santa deal downtown on Main Street. We have Customer Appreciation Day. So we do a lot of Christmas promotions that are obviously hands-on, and we just can't do it. So this is our version of the Christmas COVID kind of parade, if you will. And so we have two categories, the residential and the commercial. So each group will win $1,000 in chamber dollars for first, $500 in chamber dollars for second, and $250 in chamber dollars for third. And so it keeps the money local here so we can support our small businesses in Ashland. And the deadline is Friday, and the judging will start on Monday the 14th. And we've asked everybody to leave their lights up and through January 1st so everybody can enjoy it over the Christmas holiday.
Mm-hmm. And by Friday, we mean today for our broadcast listeners. And the website once again?
Visitashland.com.
I take it that some of the participants will be people who have been putting up displays for years. What's been the most memorable that you've seen?
There are a couple. There's one house that's over by the middle school, and they're actually master gardeners, and so they do a really great display in the summer, and so they've really started to do the lighting, and now that they know that the decorating contest is out and about, they've told us they're going to do a good one. So, but there's a 75-year-old, her name is Mary Marzalek, she's on 9th Avenue West, and she says, "I am 75 years old. I start my decorating in November during the day. Everyone can enjoy the Christmas bulbs and garland. And at night, all the beautiful lights in the trees and house. I do all the decorating, and her husband hooks up the lights. Every year," she says, "I wonder if we can do this again next year." But we did it again. So she's really excited that they were able to pull off another year of decorating. So that's on 9th Avenue West, and it's really quite stunning.
Right, and she's clearly going to be in the running for those chamber dollars. By the way, chamber dollars, I take it, can be spent at, well, you tell us.
Yeah, chamber dollars can be used at our chamber member businesses. We have over 200 that accept chamber dollars, so all the small retailers on Main Street, a lot of restaurants. So it doesn't cost the business anything. We reimburse them for the exact amount of the chamber dollars, and we really need to support our local bricks and mortar businesses this holiday season. So this is a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking to Mary McFetridge of the Ashland Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And now let's see how far Linda has gotten.
Hello, Robin. I'm just about to come up on the food and toy drop-off. Merry Christmas. Thank you for volunteering. Okay, 4 cars to go.
Well, she's almost there. And as she nears the gate, let's check in with Rabbi Mindy Ross about Hanukkah displays in the region.
Hello, Rabbi Mindy speaking. How can I help you?
Hey, Rabbi Mindy. How are you?
Thank God. Doing well. Nice to hear from you.
Well, we want to hear from your menorahs, or maybe you could do the talking for them, or other Hanukkah decorations. Where can we find them?
Well, this year, thank God, we're going to have 3 Hanukkah displays around Duluth. The first one is the Hanukkah menorah at UMD. It's the second year now that we have a Hanukkah display there, and God willing, every night it should have the correct amount of bulbs lit, so corresponding to the day of Hanukkah. So that's very exciting. It's in the Kirby Student Center. And then our main menorah, which past couple years has been moved around a little bit, but mainly at the Miller Hill Mall. This year, we weren't able to use the mall. So the first night of Hanukkah is going to be at the Duluth Civic Center, which on Thursday, which by the time this airs, will be yesterday. But we're going to be lighting the menorah and live streaming it on Facebook and Instagram, and you could always watch the replay on our Facebook page, Chabad Duluth. And our third menorah, which is a new development, is in Lincoln Park, I guess the former Esmond Hotel. Thanks to Mary Plaster, the local artist, we got an opportunity to put a menorah and Hanukkah display in the window over there. So that was very exciting. And my wife, Tirza Ross, is the more artistic one, and she took care of that. It's very cool if you go at night and you can really see the, you know, the candles shining. And, you know, there's a dreidel over there and Hanukkah coins if you look get closer. And it's very cool, exciting thing for the kids. And lastly, not really a menorah, but looking forward to having a digital billboard. It was a very generous donation by the Lamar Advertising Agency. They have a billboard if you're going east on Central Entrance. It should at some point flash Happy Hanukkah. So that's kind of the main attractions as far as menorahs going around the area. And for the rest of the Hanukkah holiday, the menorah at the Civic Center is God willing going to be on in front of the Chabad Center on London Road, on the 50th block of London Road.
Mm-hmm. And the Esmond Building, I know that. It's at Superior and 20th Avenue West. And the other one is the Kirby Center at the University of Minnesota Duluth campus. Anywhere else?
If you see my car, there's a menorah on the top of my car that should be lit up if I'm driving. You could honk or wave.
Right. Or conversely, if you see a car with a menorah on it, it's probably yours.
That's right. It's probably mine.
And the website again is chabadduluth.org. That's C-H-A-B-A-D, duluth.org, right?
Yeah, or you could go to hanukkah.org, C-H-A-N-U-K-A-H.org.
Rabbi Mindy Ross of Chabad Duluth, thank you.
Thank you for having me on today.
Well, before we go back to Linda, let's get the information from the horse's mouth. The man who started Bentleyville and Esco in 2001.
Yes, Nathan, can I help you?
Hello, Nathan Bentley. I was looking at your history, and I noticed when you began it, it was a drive-by, and then it was a walk-by as it got a little bit bigger, and you had Santa Claus and other offerings. And then when you moved to Cloquet, it was a drive-by again, getting bigger. And then in 2009 at Bayfront Park, it was a walk-through, and now you're a drive-by again. Is it back to the future?
Temporarily, just for this year. I fully wanted to go back to a walkthrough where we can interact with folks and take pictures and stand around the fire pits and have conversation with everybody. This is hopefully just a little blip in time for Bentleyville.
Mm-hmm. But it seems to be a new thing, or a thing, as they put it. People seem to be enjoying the idea of staying in their cars and still experiencing it.
Oh, it's extremely popular. It's very, very popular. There's no shortage of people coming at all.
So what's the same and what's different?
Well, I think we feel that everything is different. Just in how people get there, which is probably one of the things that's so important, is that there's only one way to get to Bentleyville this year, and that is that you must enter Bentleyville from Railroad Street on the west end of Railroad. If you're coming from the Twin Cities or you're coming from other parts of Duluth, you need to get on 535 South, wrap yourself around, and get off on the Garfield exit, and that is pretty much where it starts the line almost every night. And that's probably the biggest change for the guests to know about. But what is also big for guests to remember is that we're still collecting food and toys for the Salvation Army every single night. So we're hoping that guests remember to bring those food and toys, stop someplace before you make your visit to Bentleyville, or grab some canned goods and things out of your cupboard before you come. But as far as the feel and the atmosphere, we've tried to keep the traditional Bentleyville feel. You're going to drive through tunnels, though we made these tunnels larger. They're now 14 feet wide, 11 feet high. We still have bonfires going so that you can smell the ambiance of Bentleyville. Guests turn the radio station to 91.7 so that you'll hear all of the Bentleyville music that's animated to the 128-foot tree as it's dancing into its animation. We still give out hats to every child in the vehicle that's 10 years or younger. Santa Claus and his elves every night through social distancing have bags and hats to give to children. So some of those great things that people have come to know about Bentleyville are still existing. The public will still see nearly 5 million lights. They'll still see our 128-foot tree. Only they're going to drive around in the warmth and comfort of their vehicle.
And as you were giving directions there, I noticed you biased it toward Wisconsin because it's very easy for Wisconsinites to come over the Blatnik Bridge and get off at Garfield, and they may have a head start.
They do. And when you speak of head start, we'd really, really encourage guests to not feel that they need to be there between 4 and 6 o'clock. We start seeing cars line up very, very early, but what that's doing is just moving up our congestion earlier than spreading it out. Our big message that we want to try to get out is visit on the weekdays, but also spread yourself out. The more people that would come later in the evening, around the 8 o'clock mark, if we could get that word out, less people would be actually having to wait in line. As long as cars are in line and we have not closed down the line, we will take you.
We are talking to Nathan Bentley of Bentleyville, who is giving us advice of when to show up and when not to. So once you get in line, can you turn around and go back? Maybe you forgot your Salvation Army donation.
Once you're in line, you're in line. If you choose to get out of line, you're welcome to do that, but then you're going to go back to the end of the line again. We have emergency and contingency plans to take someone out of line if they would have a car trouble or they absolutely have to leave. We can make arrangements to do that. They can't just come and go.
And what if your emergency is that you've got to go?
There are porta potties along Garfield Avenue. There's also porta potties on Railroad Street. And then once you get into Bentleyville, there's also additional porta potties right there. But once you actually enter our castle, you're better cross your legs.
The hours again?
We are open Fridays and Saturdays from 5 until 10, and then Sunday through Thursday from 5 to 9. $10 per car. Children 10 and under all get a free hat. We also have our gift shop that we've moved off-site for social distancing purposes. We are now located in Grandma's Sports Garden at 425 South Lake Avenue.
Again, Nathan Bentley from Bentleyville. Thank you for the tips.
You betcha. Thank you so much for the call.
Okay, here we go. So this is fun. The entrance looks like it did in past years with that castle light. So if you've been to Bentleyville in the past, there's this lovely canopy of lights that you would walk through, and the walkway is wonderful.
And it's now the driveway.
It's now a driveway, yes. So it's single line car. And everyone is going very slow. Oh, it's great. So I can see the big tree from here, and there's the yellow submarine here. What an experience. Now I'm still in the canopy. Everyone's going very slow and taking lots of pictures. So I can see the Ferris wheel. They have a circus exhibit of light. So they show the bear on the tricycle, the lion. Oh, that's cute. Cute little roller coaster. And the giant tree is synchronizing with the sound of the music. Oh, peace and joy. Yes, we like that. Oh, there's a little race car. A little reindeer in the race car. Oh, here comes Thomas the Train and friends. This is the Bayfront Pavilion. Hello. Have you been volunteering for many years?
I'm staff for 10 years.
Staff for 10 years? Yeah. What do you think for this year? Better or worse?
I kind of like it better.
You kind of like it better?
Yeah.
Well, season's greetings. Thank you. So to the right is a darling igloo.
Hi, Santa.
Now I've gone behind the pavilion. We said hi to Santa. Oh, here comes a cool exhibit. This is the police and fire trucks. Thank you for all you give. And the EMTs, thank you to our troops. Oh, there's Frosty. There's Frosty and lights. And there's a lumberjack. Oh, I see dinosaurs and a palm tree. Oh, Anger Tower. I see Anger Tower across from Big Ben. Oh, there's a golfing elf. Oh, there's the love sign, L-O-V-E. I was thinking, where are people getting engaged if they're coming to Bentleyville? So many people have been engaged in Bentleyville. I mean, maybe they should have a stop-off for those who are planning to pop the question. And I love Bentleyville. And to the left is Noah's Ark and a flamingo. I did see a menorah. Oh, here we go. We have nutcrackers. So I've made the turn. Now I'm parallel with the aquarium. And we're on wooden boards. It's like a boardwalk. Okay, so we have the Viking ship here, and there's the big bridge that goes up and down. Lots of beautiful oar boats, and this is all red lights, another little canopy. Okay, there's Santa and his reindeer in the air. It looks like he's flying over us. Here, I'm going to roll my window down. So here I'm going underneath Santa. All the little kids are in front of me. You can see them out the window. They're all excited. Everyone is in their own car. But I feel like I'm the only one here because it's just me in the car. I'm coming to that area now, the entrance, which was the old entrance to Bentleyville. And yet another reindeer. Hi. Which reindeer are you? Oh, it's Blitzen. It's Blitzen.
Wait, so how did Blitzen identify himself?
Turned around and wiggled. Here we go, coming into the last canopy. So here is the Rudolph exhibit. And a beautiful canopy of white and red lights. This is my favorite, white and red lights. Okay, coming to the end. I don't want it to end. This is too much fun. And there's the gingerbread man and the gingerbread girl. Oh, there's some little hockey player. So here it is, the end, right turn only. So I am sad to leave Bentleyville. I want to go again. So thanks for coming along on my journey and adventure.
And thank you for taking us. We've been talking with and visiting Bentleyville with Linda Nervick of Winter Fun 101. Coming up, one last guest after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. What do you get when you combine a violin, drums, and two guys named Nick? Well, if those two Nicks are playing the guitar and the bass, you can call it One Less Guest. which is a perfect name for our musical guests. Like a bunch of groups who've made it past their breakthrough, they've got a name that could use an explanation, and I'm sure they'll give one. The group started as a duo of violinist and vocalist Rin Cooper and guitarist Nick Muska, and they grew, adding to the current lineup Cody Thorson on drums and Nick Glass on bass. The two original members join me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Rin Cooper and Nick Muska.
Hi, Robin.
Hi.
So did I get your story right?
That's pretty much it. That's kind of how it went down.
Well, fill us in a little more. How did it start?
Nick and I initially met at the UWS Jazz Band, and we decided we wanted to start a duo, just start playing some music together, having a good time, playing around some local venues in the Duluth Superior area. And like you said, we eventually decided we needed kind of the beginning of a rhythm section, so we added Nick Glass. And that was really fun, but we decided we wanted to rock a little bit harder, and then we added some drums, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. And how long ago was that?
I want to say we've been a four-piece for about 2 years, and then so add one more year for like our duo phase. So 3 years mm-hmm. since the beginning about.
Well, part of that beginning that you just alluded to was that you interned at Wisconsin Public Radio's Superior Bureau.
No, I had a lot of fun. Nick worked there too, actually, yeah. He did a lot more for the radio station than I did. I just kind of was a fly on the wall.
Oh, that's not true.
I didn't run my own show like you did.
Could we find an air check from the Nick Muska show?
I bet you could.
All right.
I did 91 Jazz Street when I was at UW Superior, and it was a lot of fun. That's how I met a lot of people. I love college radio.
So, of course, there's jazz guitar, and there's jazz violin. But what brought you two together as a duo, and where did the violin fit in? What told you you were going to be not classical?
We're still trying to find where the violin fits in. No, I have a lot of fun with the group, and I knew very early on that classical just wasn't quite my bag. I definitely love it, and I've always loved it, but it's just not what I really see myself playing lifelong, and so it's been really great for me to play with this group and kind of to find my own personal sound.
Nick, what's your story?
You know, I think Lauren and I kind of simultaneously decided we wanted to really start focusing a lot more on music and work toward doing it full time. So I kind of set off doing a solo acoustic thing. And, I've always kind of built bands the way that my mom like decorates her house. That's like the best analogy I could come up with. My mom, she always says like, just put stuff together that you like and it'll look and feel like home, you know? That's kind of how I approach like, who I want to work with. It's more about like, getting the right players together and kind of feeling comfortable. You know, I've never really gone into a project being like, I want to start a funk band. It's always like, get the right people together and then it's like, then what do we want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like clicked between us pretty much instantly. And I don't know, I don't like playing by myself. You know, I like making music with people. So when I was doing the solo acoustic things, I knew it was eventually going to, it happened very quickly. I think I only did like 2 shows by myself. And then she was at the second show. And then she was playing with me on the 3rd show, I believe. And then it was her and I.
And did you say acoustic guitar or when did you electrify yourselves?
Well, I mean, it was acoustic at that time. It was kind of just like, I didn't really know what I was doing. And it's a little bit easier to like get gigs doing like just solo acoustic things. So That was kind of like, for me, it was just like, I just wanted mm-hmm. to play a lot. But I am more of a, I kind of have to put myself into a box, but I really love the electric guitar. A lot of my heroes are electric guitarists, and I spend a lot of time working on what I would kind of say are some, skill sets that come along with the electric in particular.
Rin, are you using an acoustic violin or an electric violin or both?
So for the band, I typically play my electric violin just because first, I've been a little more sturdy, even though it doesn't look like it. If something happens to it, my life won't end. Whereas if something happens to my acoustic one, I'm going to have some explanations to some people.
Mr. Stradivarius wouldn't be pleased, right?
Right. No, I that is not a good violin. But also, I really enjoy getting into the electric fetish stuff. Nick has told me at length about the pros and cons of like acoustic versus electric instruments, and so I've been using like cool new pedals with my violin. It has 5 strings, which I really appreciate. I'm having a lot of fun getting to know like this new style of instrument, and I think it fits really well with the band.
You're speaking to a frustrated violinist, and you certainly got my attention with 5 strings. I certainly know enough to tell our audience that is unusual. Is the 5th string high or low? Where is it?
It's lower. Yeah. Yeah, so it's on the left side. It goes lower, so there's 1 string in the middle and then 2 on either side, and it really changes the game. I really like being able to get those low notes, because when you're playing violin, you just get to the bottom of that last scale, and you're like, I just want a little more.
How about we hear something that uses that 5th string?
I think I use it on the Come On Over solo. I think I get down there. It's the first song on the album, and it's a really good introduction to everything that's to come. It's about someone wanting someone else to come on over and hanging out with them.
All right, well, let's take a listen to Come On Over by One Less Guest. It's true, and it's all. We just heard Come On Over by One Less Guest. Two of the four members are Ren Cooper and Nick Muska, who joined me today. Nick, you had told me in an earlier incarnation of this song that it probably needed drums. So tell me how the rest of the group materialized.
It was New Year's Eve, and we had just played our set, and we were feeling good, but like we could tell the crowd wanted more from us. And then we watched our friends, Jacob Mann and the Salty Dogs, that are now called the New Salty Dogs, and they just blew the house down with this full electric sound and drums, and it was amazing. We were like, okay, we need to do that. We were looking for drummers like the next day.
You know, you're reminding me, and probably because I have Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young on the brain, because we did a documentary on the 50th anniversary of the recording of Ohio about Kent State earlier this year. But it does remind me of the story of Atlantic Records executive Ahmet Ertegun telling the trio of Crosby, Stills, and Nash that they could use a fourth member, more rocking, if you will, and that, of course, got to be Neil Young. Did that kind of happen to you without the Ahmet Ertegun?
Yeah. We did the, and thing at first. We were Cooper and Muska. So we kind of did the and. Imagine if we had just kept adding last names, Brandon.
Well, a name parallel, too. And a perfect time for you to tell us what the name means.
What it means and how we came up with it, two different things, you know. What it means to me is, you know, it's like orange.
This is always a hard question.
Well, it's got to be the obvious question, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And we just keep struggling every time. Nick came up with it, or we were all trying to come up with a name when we added Nick Glass, and Nick's funny thing he said is like, well, we can't be Cooper and Muska and Glass because then we'll sound like a law firm. And so then,
well, it worked for Crosby, Stills, and Nash,
right? But you know, they're them, so they can get away with it. We wanted to come up with like a real band name, so we like struggled over it for a solid month. We would come in every week for rehearsal and be like, okay, did anyone come up with anything? And we would throw some things around, and Nick was bringing in reader's thesauruses. Eventually he brought it on a list of names, and we were like, oh, that one's pretty cool, where did you find that? And then he could not find where he found it, so it's meant to be. It just appeared amidst the...
All right. Well, then I'll stop looking for the missing guest.
What I like about the name, there's a lot of storytelling in our music. And that's something that I think kind of sets us apart from other rock bands, other jazz rock bands. We spend a lot of time on lyrics. I like the name because it's like a three-word story.
Well, you're setting up an opportunity to play one of your story songs. Any of them on your album, Monochrome?
Probably the title track, Monochrome. That's a good one.
All right, and what's the song about?
I was working at a coffee shop, and there were all of these women artist types that would kind of come in, and they would work by themselves. And I just kind of had this, character in my head of, this kind of driven, artistic woman who's kind of, maybe lost her way a little bit. Maybe she got a little too stuck on trying to come up with, the perfect piece or... painting a picture of herself and the things around her and stuff.
All right, nothing like visual art on the radio. Let's hear Monochrome by One Less Guest.
Paints a portrait of herself in pink. A self-study in pastel. Thank you. foot away. She thinks back to another time, a picture with some brighter shades. And she wonders where Vermilion went and why Magenta had to go. Staring at a pastel portrait of a face she used to know in monochrome. In monochrome. In monochrome. In monochrome.
That was Monochrome by One Less Guest, two of whom are here as our guests, Ren Cooper and Nick Muska. You can find their work at onelessguest.com. Hopefully with the vaccine, the COVID pandemic will end and you'll be back in the clubs. But you're welcome back here with your drummer, Cody Thorson, and the other Nick, Nick Glass, on bass. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you all for having us. Bye!
And since we have the two of you here, let's go out with Suitcase for Two.
Lately I find myself reminiscing.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, we just had as many Christmas lights as you can put on a radio without blowing a fuse, and they're one of the biggest tourist attractions. You've been looking at the forecast for tourism in Duluth. What's it look like for 2021?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a little better than 2020, though it's still going to take several years to fully rebound. Next year, the mayor expects to collect about 25% less in tourism taxes than in previous years, when we've seen as high as $12 million come in. So that means that several organizations aren't going to get funding or are going to see their funding cut from that pool of money that comes from taxes on bars, restaurants, and hotels. It will be a little better. The 25% cut is a conservative estimate, especially as we, you know, await a possible rollout of the vaccine. And Spirit Mountain, notably, will be getting more money, about $500,000 from this pool of tourism tax. So Visit Duluth, the Area Tourism Bureau says, you know, we're not expected to reach pre-pandemic levels until 2024. But again, as the pandemic fades, we're hoping to see more people safely come to the area.
Well, one specific tourist spot in the Northland is Voyageurs National Park, and the future there is looking dark, and that's good news, I understand.
Absolutely, it is. The Minnesota's only national park was certified this week as an international dark sky park, and that is a, at this point, fairly rare certification. Just 135 other locations around the world have been certified by a global nonprofit over the past two decades. Darkness as a resource is important for ecology, for preserving a cultural resource. You know, up to 80% of the U.S. population can't see the Milky Way from where they live. So it has no real legal authority, but it does ensure that Voyageurs will work to protect the darkness, keep lights to a certain standard, and educate the public on, you know, why it's so important to see the sky.
Well, Danny, on the Wisconsin side, you've been looking at a report by the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change. What's it say?
Yeah, the report released this week, it includes 55 recommendations. Not all of them were completely endorsed by the task force, but There are ways to adapt and reduce the effects of climate change across 9 focus areas, and that includes energy and transportation and agriculture. And some of the notable things that the task force recommended was an Office of Environmental Justice. And it also recommended creating jobs programs as we're all looking for another COVID-19 stimulus package. They're calling on clean energy to be a part of that and make that investment to help stimulate the economic recovery in Wisconsin.
All right. Well, also on the environmental front, there was a wolf hunt slated for the state. Or there isn't? Or which is it?
So when Wisconsin's wolf hunt is in effect, and that's basically when the gray wolf is not listed as a federally endangered species, and that season runs from the first Saturday in November through, I believe, it's the last Saturday in February. And so that means that, you know, with the announcement earlier this fall that the gray wolf would be delisted and federal protections would be removed as soon as January, that potentially we could have seen a wolf hunt next month. But DNR officials decided that they were going to hold off on resuming a wolf hunt. Part of the reason for that is that the DNR wants to take more time to develop input from people on a harvest quota when they do resume a wolf hunt and to gather public input on a wolf management plan.
Okay. Well, still on the environment, Brooks, what's the latest on Enbridge's Line 3? Is it on or off?
It is, for the most part, on. Construction has begun and has been ongoing for about a week now. And there are about 2,000 workers along the 340-mile route crossing Minnesota. I visited a protest site near the Mississippi River in rural Aiken County earlier this week, and there are just about a dozen folks set up there trying to put themselves in the way of the pipeline as trees are cleared and workers prep the area to lay the pipe, which will replace the aging Line 3 that has been in the ground for about 50 years and bring oil from Alberta to the Superior Terminal. Lawsuits are still ongoing, and opponents are going to seek a stay in construction while permit challenges are considered, and protest action is expected to continue right up until a decision is made or work is stopped or it is completed.
And I'm sure this isn't the last update you'll be giving us. We can't get away without a COVID update. The vaccine is almost ready. How's it going to work?
Yeah, that's the big question, I think, for the end of the year and well into 2021. Minnesota expects to get 183,000 shots delivered by the end of the year. And they're prioritizing healthcare workers and long-term care residents. That's a population of about 500,000 people, however. So the state's trying to winnow down that list to those at highest risk of infection and death.
And Danny, on the Wisconsin side?
In Wisconsin, we're expected to receive about a third of what Minnesota is going to get. We're slated to receive 65,000 doses of the coronavirus vaccines made by Pfizer and Moderna. Those vaccines were reviewed Thursday by the Food and Drug Administration, and Wisconsin is also prioritizing healthcare workers and long-term care facilities and essential workers as part of its state vaccination plan. But like Brooks was saying, you know, Wisconsin has more than 450,000 healthcare workers alone. So it's going to be months before, you know, there's wide distribution of the vaccine. Although all of the state's 7 healthcare emergency readiness coalitions in Wisconsin are going to receive a distribution of that vaccine, and that would include an area of northwestern Wisconsin.
Well, it can't come soon enough, but when it does come, I'm sure we'll be more than ready. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. I do. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you now with more of the music of one last guest, Deja Vu, from their album, Monochrome. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.